Welcome to Better Together, a Vaishnava family podcast.
A podcast where we explore family life from a bhakti yoga perspective. We are your hosts. I'm Aksh.
And I'm Gopika. Welcome to episode 16. Raising a spirited child. Our journey so far. Something that we have struggled to make it through or understand is this idea of a highly sensitive child, and it's something that I had no idea even existed. We mentioned in one of our earlier episodes that we were starting to learn more about highly sensitive children, research more, since our son seems to really lean that way. And the more that we read about it, the more we have learned, not just about him, but quite frankly, about ourselves.
Yeah. I'm really excited to be able to sit down with you and talk about it more comprehensively, including how it connects back to bhakti. So let's get started. To be honest, it's been a new world for me. I imagine for some of our listeners also, they might benefit from some background. So since you've been at the forefront of a lot of the research, can you tell me a little bit about what is the concept of high sensitivity? What does it mean?
Yeah, I can definitely share some of what I've learned. I'm not an occupational therapist or a professional psychologist. So whatever I'm sharing is simply from the perspective of a parent. I have a psych background, so I kind of really nerd out on this stuff when it comes to learning about the brain and how that affects temperament and everything.
Which I think is really cool.
Oh, thanks. But I just want to put that out there, that as a disclaimer, that this is not medical advice or professional advice. It's just simply sharing what we've learned through our reading. Yeah, from what I understand, the concept of highly sensitive is known by many labels in the parenting education world. Like, some people call them spirited children, spicy children. Of course, the very famous orchid children coming from actual research that was done by a pediatrician on child's temperament. There's even a lot of debate over whether these children overlap with the notion of neurodivergence. People who are neurodivergent have brains that function a little differently. They often see the world differently.
They say about like 20%.
Yeah, so about 20% of the population. And then for the orchid child research, that was accounted to be about 30% of the population were orchids. So it's like hard to know whether or not it's the same thing.
So is this something that you'd say someone is born with, or it's acquired like through things in the environment?
Yeah. So the way I heard it once described was this idea of machinery. We're all born with a unique machinery system that allows us to both experience our outer world and our inner world. And this machinery is our nervous systems and or our sensory systems, right? So whether or not we're born with it or it's the environment, again, such a complicated question. Now there's research being done about children in the womb prenatally and how the conditions in which the mother is living, how it might affect how susceptible the genes are to turning on to stressful situations. For example, if a mother is living through a very stressful, traumatic situation, that child's genes might be built in such a way to have a more sensitive nervous system, because for that child, that's going to be what helps it to survive. Is it nature? Is it nurture? I don't know. I think about this so deeply only because, of course, our son, we literally found out we were expecting him 2 or 3 days into lockdown. And it was really such a stressful time. Expecting a child for the first time during a global pandemic. I think my mind, my body, and my heart definitely registered the levels of stress. Walking into that first appointment by myself, wearing a mask, with people having no idea how COVID affects pregnant women, and not knowing if I would have to give birth by myself, right? That all was terrifying. But anyway, you know, when it comes to this machinery, whether it's nature or nurture, we're all born with something. Mm-hmm. And some kids have machinery that's a bit more flexible, able to adjust, go with the flow. And other children's machinery is more sensitive to their environment, both mm-hmm. externally and internally. So tiny, tiny little things might set it off. And mm-hmm. they need more specific, more perfect conditions for this machinery to be working properly.
Yeah. Right, right. So that all makes sense. What does it look like for kids to have this type of machinery?
We could clue into it with our own kid, right?
Yeah.
But the more I read accounts from other parents who have sensitive children, it seems like a lot of them feel you often just know you have them from the very beginning. Mm. Like they're extremely alert. Yeah, Kishore was so awake mm-hmm. from birth as a newborn. He was so intensely focused and interested in books. Mm. Whereas, you know, our second born was just very content to sleep. Yeah. And snuggle. And if you try to show her a book, she was like, yeah, I'm not doing this right now.
Yeah.
Just very different. So yeah, they just have channels that are so open to the world. So sleep is often a challenge for these children, because if you think about what sleep means, it means being able to regulate these systems and shut them down, which is hard when you have a very sensitive, specific mm-hmm. system that mm-hmm. requires very specific things mm-hmm. to be able to calm down and shut down. Yeah. And certainly sleep was a challenge for us. Yeah. And they're extremely perceptive.
Mm-hmm.
They just notice every single little thing, like every detail.
Annoyingly.
Extremely annoyingly. I mean, so smart, so intelligent, so sharp as a tack, but annoying to the T. I remember when I would be driving, and if I just braked like slightly harder, not even screeching the brakes or like jolting anybody in the car, just slightly harder, he'd be like, "Mama, why are you doing that?" Like, how did you even feel that? You know?
Yeah. There's also the other story of when we come back from our temple on Sundays, we have to keep the light on in the back.
Oh, yeah.
So that the kids don't fall asleep. But when we get home, we have to make sure that we switch it back in the middle setting. He is so attuned that he knows exactly what position the switch is in, even though he hasn't touched it.
Yep. Yeah.
And if it's not, and he finds out the next day, he will make sure it's pointed out.
Yeah. Yeah, they just have open channels to the world, which means they also emotionally really experience things in big ways. So they have very big, very intense feelings, often happening very fast. Not necessarily always bad. They also experience the happy, joyful emotions in really big, boisterous ways as well, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I'm thinking back to Kishore as a little toddler and how challenging it was. And again, since most of those years were during COVID and it was our first kid, I didn't realize.
Mm-hmm.
I necessarily wasn't clued in. I just thought this was toddlerhood. This is a true story. The kid took a train from Kishore at the library
mm-hmm.
and he cried for probably an hour and 40 minutes that day.
Mm-hmm.
And I could not calm him down. As much as I tried to stay calm, I tried all the techniques that I had learned, that I had read about, you know, validating his feelings, offering him a distraction, trying to show understanding, trying not to say anything and just be present for him.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, looking back, I was like, wow, that was a huge clue that perhaps
mm-hmm.
there's something slightly different about my kid.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, I just found myself feeling like things are just like harder maybe than other kids that I see around. But that started kind of making us feel like, okay, what's going on, right?
For a long time, it was like, is there something wrong with us as parents?
Yeah.
Why is this so hard for us during this phase and so chill for everybody else?
I'm glad you bring that up. How do you even know that this is like a sensory, highly sensitive neurotype or something like that versus regular kid behavior or maybe a kid who's just responding to certain parenting strategies?
Yeah. Well, as Kishore got older, like I think deep down in my gut, I always had this nagging feeling that there's just something a little different about my child. But I was just like, oh, he's just a toddler. He's just quirky. Part of the journey was talking to people and talking to professionals. See, because at the end of the day, something that also held me back was this fear that if my child was labeled something or given a diagnosis, then what would that mean? Like, I would have to admit that my child has something. And part of it was that what would other people
social
think? The social stigma, right? What does that mean for our family? I really had to move from that fear space to a space of label or not, diagnosis or not. Is my child getting everything he needs to thrive as an individual, unique human being? Like, who cares about the medical diagnosis or this or that or whatever it may be? It might be something, it might not be something. Five people might say five different things, right? But at the end of the day, can I learn something about my child and the way that his brain is wired and the way that his body works that will help him thrive in the world? And I think that's philosophy I would want to apply to all children, even to our daughter, who doesn't seem to be highly sensitive at this point. What does she need uniquely to be the best version of herself? And so when I looked at it with that lens, I felt a lot more empowered to seek answers because what I was doing didn't seem to be enough to help him thrive.
And I love that answer. And I would add to it that if the lens and the particular interventions that are coming from it show efficacy, then that is at least one potential proof that it is working and helping address something that was an unmet need for that child.
Right, exactly. As parents, we just weren't able to meet this need, maybe because we didn't know that the child had this need. And we thought the behavior or the problems was coming from like another place, right? Understanding more and just having different perspectives, different approaches could be really empowering. This idea of neurodivergence is often seemed like a bad thing. It's like feared. However, there's a lot of strengths that come with highly sensitive people and neurodivergent people. Often it's these differently wired sensitive people that are leaders and highly passionate change makers in the world because their sensitivity, their ability to process the world at such deep levels actually empowers them to make change and see the world with a creativity that other people may not. And so the same things that might be perhaps causing challenges in childhood, this is the very thing that is going to make them be outstanding as adults. You know, like the shining stars of the world.
As we've been discovering all of this, I've been just noticing more people out there that who I think might be neurodivergent or highly sensitive, and even people that are really successful and famous.
Daniel Radcliffe?
Elon Musk. I mean, yes, he's controversial in many ways, but...
Maybe don't bring him up right now.
But my point is that there are people who have been very successful and have learned to tap their superpowers.
100%. And a lot of people never know that they're highly sensitive or neurodivergent. They find out later as adults. Like, for example, I follow one person on Instagram. She basically has run a company for now parents raising highly sensitive children. She herself labels herself highly sensitive. And as an adult, she went for like an autism evaluation. And as an adult, she received an autism diagnosis. And she describes that experience as the most empowering experience of her life because her life all of a sudden makes sense as to why she always felt a certain way. I have to check myself because I hear autism and it's like, oh my God, I would never want that. But it's like neurodivergence is not a disease. You know? It's simply just a way to describe the individuality of humans that actually exists between everybody.
Nice.
What do you feel like has been your biggest lesson so far from raising a spirited child?
even though I think of myself as very open-minded and tolerant and patient, it's sort of challenged me in all of those ways. I've found that while certainly learning about this has been empowering, it's also more pushing my buttons in terms of it requires so much investment as a parent. At the end of the day, it actually requires me being present, being playful, and bringing energy to the relationship. And sometimes as a parent, that's hard to do, especially in this phase when we're just exhausted all the time.
Yeah. But don't you feel like learning more about being highly sensitive has been relieving and also like empowering in terms of tapping into so many other strategies that can support him besides going into fear and power mode? I felt like before,
yes,
when our buttons were pushed, we had no recourse. So it just almost like went into lecturing, trying to logically explain something, threatening, counting down. It just wasn't working. And
I agree. It's been so relieving to learn about it and also have tools.
Yeah, totally. Right. Like, we'll just get into a little bit specifically, just in case it might be helpful for anybody else out there. First of all, off the bat, sensory systems and nervous system regulation is highly critical to the development of all children. So all children actually can benefit from sensory activities, you know, depending on their profile. It's just that like the highly sensitive kids, depending on what's going on for them, require it to thrive. And the other kids might be able to, you know, get through it just fine, whether they get it or not, right? Sometimes when we talk about sensitivity, you automatically think like, oh, they can't handle the textures of foods or clothes. But it can go the other way, where some children might be under responsive, which is the case of our son, that his sensory systems are actually a little under responsive. So just the way he's wired, his body just doesn't take enough information in, specifically in the proprioceptive system, which is your body's system that lets you know the position of your muscles at any given time. Getting input to those muscles through pushing, pulling, climbing, carrying is what helps your body understand its position in space. So if you don't get that information, you can imagine you might feel very on edge and not safe in your body and not regulated because you're just like not getting that information, right? So he's under responsive there, and also in his vestibular system, which is your body's system to let you know the position of your head. So again, you can imagine if you're just not getting enough input, you just don't know what to do with your body at any given time, and you can feel really uneasy. And that can lead to a whole host of behaviors and activities and dysregulation. Like learning that when we get our kid more input to these sensory systems, it's not the only answer to the problem, for sure. But it has been amazing to see how much it's benefited. Incorporating heavy work. So through lifting heavy things, wheelbarrow walks, arm wrestling, wall push-ups, throwing cushions to make an obstacle course and playing floor is lava.
Monkey bars,
hanging, swinging, doing burrito rolls where you like wrap up your kid in a blanket and have them wrestle it out. Pillow massages, like all of these things have been huge. You know, like just incorporating them throughout our day playfully whenever we see an opportunity. You know, like if we're transitioning from point A to point B, can I do it in a way that is sensory fun? Can we spin there? Can we wheelbarrow walk there? You know, like just throwing it in. It's been amazing.
So this is really interesting because, you know, if I look back, times where our son was dysregulated. I can see like he was sensory seeking this type of input.
He'd be like crashing into things or like overly using his body in the wrong ways. Even now, like sometimes as much as he loves his little sister, sometimes he's like a bit too strong with her, even though he doesn't mean to be. Chewing on everything, which, you know, as a baby, he really put things in his mouth and that continued. And I did not realize that that was actually a sign that his body was craving some more proprioceptive input. Since we started incorporating some of these other things, that's gone down. And now if I see him putting something in his mouth, it's a little signal to me, hey, his body needs some help.
You know? It's really great. If you come to our house and go to our bathroom in the hallway, you'll find there's no hand towel rack, because when he was younger, he used to hang on that extensively.
And eventually
he broke it off. Looking back, like, it all makes sense. I think he was craving that type of input. He's becoming more and more aware of what he needs.
Yeah. Well, that's the other thing, how empowering this has been for him. As a four-year-old, he's starting to tap into the kinds of things that he might need to feel calm and regulated. And there are times, not all the time, where he can actually voice to us, hey, mama, I think I need a swing to help my body feel calm. Mm. Or I think I need to throw something heavy. I feel like that's huge, because even as adults, and I'll speak for myself, as an adult, I am struggling to figure out what can make my nervous system regulated.
Yeah.
How can I try different things to help calm me down? And like, learning about this world of high sensitivity and all the resources that are out there has been eye-opening.
Mm.
I feel like I've been trying some of this stuff for myself.
Yeah, same. I'm on the swing now once in a while.
And I make sure that I lift my weights, and I feel so much better after, because I realize it's actually really calming for my nervous system. And how cool is it that we can empower our kid at age four with this knowledge? The more we go through this journey, the more I feel it's been so awesome to learn about this and get the support that we need to help support him, because it's been so good for all of us and our whole family.
How do you feel about the fact that there's so much we have to do to fill his sensory cup before going to like an event or a family gathering? Like, most of these places are not sensory friendly, right? Yeah. To kids of this type of nature.
Yeah, it's hard. There's no sugarcoating it. It really sucks, because most of the world doesn't understand. And they're not malintentioned.
Yeah.
But oftentimes most of the world makes things worse for you as a parent. Things that people do to children that are brushed off or not seen as big deals, and maybe they aren't big deals to other kids, like touching them without consent, which is, again, a whole other topic.
Oh, yeah.
Or like interrogating them, demanding answers, or things that we do to kids because we're adults sometimes. And I'm guilty of it too.
Yeah.
For a highly sensitive child, it's like way more intense of an experience. So when you're a parent in that situation, you constantly feel like you have to be advocating for your child. Perhaps you might end up upsetting someone because you speak up for them.
Yeah.
So it's like really important for me to continue to advocate for him, so he knows how to advocate for himself and his needs in a world like this. Mm. We've talked about some of the challenges that comes with raising highly sensitive children, but is there anything from our faith that we can derive strength from to support us on this journey?
Mm. You brought up the term machinery before.
Yeah.
And I like that, because it maps well to the Vedic paradigm. Physical body, which is like the hardware, the mind and intelligence, and the ego, which is like a software, and then consciousness as the spirit. What I feel like Bhakti helps me to do is have greater acceptance that different people might have different hardware and or software.
Yeah.
And you don't need to change your software to be loved. You don't need to change your software to be even spiritual.
Yeah.
I think that's something that allows me to separate myself from that, I guess, expectation that, in our case, our son like has to be quote unquote normal.
Honestly, what is this idea of normal anyway? It's a social construct that has been coined to help us all feel we're accepted and we're part of something, which we could argue is a deeper spiritual need that is missing, right?
Right.
Yeah, I love what you're saying, because something that I love about bhakti so much is that the idea of being unique and diversity is foundational. Every soul is a unique spark of God.
Yeah.
On top of that, if you think about Krishna
as
a person and what he appreciates, he must appreciate diversity. You know, the scriptures describe that in all the universes, there exists 8,400,000 different types of species of life. Why in the world would you need 100 different types of lizards? Like, why? You know, unless you really truly appreciated diversity. And so just because society might often reward typically wired brains, like you were saying, it doesn't mean that something's wrong. Our son is one of Krishna's diverse creations, and he is destined to contribute to the world with his unique gifts in his way.
There's many examples even within scriptures that will reference that sense of diversity, but even one that maybe is more recent is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, considered a divine personality. It was such a wonderful to observe how he loved so many people around him that were so diverse from so many different walks of life. People that were intellectual, people that were completely non-intellectual, people that were young, people that were very old, people that were married and householders, people that were complete renunciates.
Animals also, right? Like the dog?
Men, women, dogs.
Yeah.
And, you know, to me, that is an example of that diversity, and that it actually is about reaching anybody and everybody.
There is a spot for everybody in Mahaprabhu's movement. And he believed in that, which is why he took the chanting to the streets, right? Overthrow the caste system. Yeah, I love that. And that gives me a lot of solace when I think about having a child who might not fit into social stereotypes. It is 100% possible for him to find his unique connection to God in a way that makes sense for him, if that is what he chooses for himself.
Arguably one of Mahaprabhu's closest is someone named Nityananda Prabhu.
Oh, yes.
Who by many is given the title Avadhut.
Yeah.
And Avadhut, you know, literally means one who is the most free. They were marching to their own beat.
Yeah.
And it was just acknowledged that they were not necessarily following the social conventions in the same way, and they didn't need to be seen in that light. So the fact that someone like Nityananda Prabhu,
who we worship on our altar,
and who played a huge role in really establishing the lineage and the teaching, was himself someone that might be a bit different than most people.
Yeah.
For me, it was also very inspiring.
Yeah, I love that. So, to wrap, one takeaway.
How Krishna says in the Gita, one who approaches me, I give the intelligence by which they can come to me. To me, it just comes back to this idea of just with our sincerity and effort, it can be reciprocated. That's a lot of what's happened here, and especially your sincerity, because I think you were really like trying to figure out like what could be going on. And through that, we've learned so much. I guess my takeaway is I'm just grateful to you. And, you know, I'm grateful to Krishna for giving us more of that intelligence to try to figure out the path and opened my perspectives of that people can be different, but still be amazing people.
Yeah, no, I love that point. Diversity is beautiful. It's easy to say that statement, but I feel like we're being charged with having to really live it.
Yeah.
So we made it.
We made it. Nobody woke up.
Thank you for listening. Please do connect with us on Instagram at bettertogether.vfp. We would love to hear your thoughts, your reflections, your feedback. If you share any stories or experiences with highly sensitive people in your family, or perhaps you are one yourself, you know, we would love to hear from you and hear your thoughts. And thank you so much for listening and connecting with us. With that, take care, and we'll see you on the next episode. Hare Krishna.